Orbiting from Technology Hall on the campus of Naugatuck Valley Community College in Waterbury, Connecticut, this is the wrap-up episode of Satellite.
Came out as 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff!
This is Frank Labanca. Today I am joined by Jane Don, the now retired co-founder of the Center for 21st Century Skills. I had the distinct pleasure of working with Jane for 3 years in my former role as director of the center. Even prior to my work at the center, I was always amazed at the quality of STEM programming that the center was able to bring to teachers and classrooms. The center had a clear vision that incorporating technology and relevant project-based learning was the way to tackle challenges of increased student engagement and achievement, especially for underserved students. Over the years, the center has been funded by the Connecticut Department of Education, the Nellie Mae Education Foundation, the National Science Foundation, and the Office of Innovation and Improvement at the U.S. Department of Education. Needless to say, the Center for 21st Century Skills was literally at the epicenter of evidence-based educational improvement. It's exciting to be here at Naugatuck Valley Community College because we've trained literally hundreds and hundreds of teachers here. Jane, you were at the center since its inception. Based on your experience, what were the keys to the center's success for students?
First of all, we had an amazing visionary director, where his vision was using technology to create a student-centered classroom and having students conceive of and work on projects in science, technology, and math, and engineering across all the different curriculums. But because it was incorporating technology at a level that at the time, I want to say around 2003, it wasn't as pervasive in the classrooms as it is today. The students were already there.
You know, I think that's such an interesting thing to say. Students are ready. It's sometimes the adults that are not ready, whether that be pedagogically or maybe even emotionally prepared to be facilitators of this type of learning. You know, and you said student-centered approaches. What do you think are some of the important features or factors that make student-centered learning work?
Engagement. All teachers want engagement. But if you're creating an instructional model where you are engaging the students in relevant work, relevant to whether it's in science, it's something that's happening today, something that's changing today, in math, in technology. Relevancy caused engagement. There's no question about it. It wasn't something out of a textbook. It was something that was happening right then. And it was really easy to see. The students were already there with the technology. But to incorporate the technology into a curriculum that existed and giving it more 21st century relevancy was, I believe, the key factor that started. It didn't end there, but it started that immediate student engagement. When I was teaching myself, one of the things that I was able to say to bring to the teachers was, do not worry if you aren't at their level of technology. They'll take care of it. They'll show you or they'll help you. But that was very, very hard pedagogically for teachers who were used to being the sage on the stage to release of their usual stance in a classroom.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really key feature is that students have the ability to own their learning and the teachers feel that they can facilitate that learning. As a classroom teacher for many years myself, that's some place where I wanted to evolve my teaching to, a place where kids could make choices in what they were doing. And I believe that starts with developing ideas, allowing students to develop ideas. So many times, teacher presents idea to student. You present the idea because it's part of your curriculum, a factor based on time or whatever it is. But when students have the ability to ask the questions, I think you gain a level of autonomy for them. But again, to your point, that idea that they can be engaged in a really meaningful way.
And again, I think mostly because what we were asking students to do was to be engaged in something that was relevant to what they wanted to know. Not just telling them what they should know, but telling them, this is what is said. What do you think we could go from there. When you have microbiology, and here's where cell division is, and this is a given, this is never going to change. What do you think we can do with the way science has developed? Literally, a science textbook is out of relevancy when it comes off the press.
Sure.
But today, kids can use technology to be on top of what that is.
Yeah. I often used to say we had this focus on technology, but really technology was the decoy, right? We let the technology be the tool, not the curriculum or the program. It was the tool to allow students to conduct meaningful, relevant projects and develop really cool products as a result of it. So, you know, thinking back to maybe some of the projects you've seen kids do over the years, why don't we maybe identify something that was exciting and has that whole idea of what you were talking about in terms of relevance and allowed them to develop something that was pretty cool as a result?
The first two big schools that we worked with, both of these schools, these students came up with community-based ideas, some way to make their community better. And in Hartford High School, something I never would have thought of in a million years. They said there are many anti-smoking campaigns, but the bus stops, people sit there and smoke in those little, call them little places where you wait for a bus, but they're covered. And so for my health science teachers in their project was around how do we publicize and how do we get to the point where you can sit down and wait for a bus and you're not going to be overwhelmed by smoke. New Haven, the students had recognized that most of the bullying, most of the terrorizing of other students was happening in the stairwell. And they created a program for an alert system. And it was called Back Off Bully. And this was something that was embraced by the school at the time after it happened. The students were on national television talking about this. But again, in one case, a small community, a school. In the other case, a larger community.
So, you know, we talk about projects a lot and having kids do projects. And I think a lot of times when we talk about teacher products with students and projects with students, they have a finite definition to them. Maybe they're going to take a week or 2 weeks to do. But the work the center was doing was really kind of different than that. Exactly. These were extended projects. Maybe we can talk about a little bit about the process of learning important standards and content, but through the context of a project. So maybe you can talk to us a little bit about the nature of the project. You know, what would happen, how it would work in a classroom, and then how it would manifest over time.
We had a research and design class, we had science classes, we had e-commerce classes. So within, let's just take e-commerce, what does that look like? What is, you know, how do you market? How do you become an entrepreneur? Those kind of things. So we would come in and say, okay, what would be a project that you could do in your e-commerce class around entrepreneurship, something that someone has not done before, and give it over to the students, and then starting in that very basic teacher thing, let's brainstorm. The teacher is only throwing out that one question. They might use something like organic food. Okay, where are we with organic food? What could we do to improve something about marketing or bringing up a new product? And the students would go from there, and they would create that brainstorming list of things. And the teacher would just be facilitating, not saying that's not realistic, not giving any info at the time. That would be where we'd start. And then just to break it down into little pieces, and also that they could come out with a product at the end. A product, not an idea, a product. What does it take to create a product? Well, you got to have a business plan. There's your spreadsheets, there's all that. What else does it take? Marketing, what does that look like? Anyway, so they would maybe identify the components of this product, how they would create the product.
Right.
Whoever came up with the idea would present to the class, and the students would vote on it and come down to one idea.
You know, I think it's important to note that this is not a project or product that a student creates. And the scale of the work that these kids was doing was quite significant, to the point that we often found that many of the schools and programs that were doing this would departmentalize in the process. You'd have one group of students only working on the marketing, and maybe one group of students, if it was a technology project, working on the coding, and another group working on the design. And it was just too big for one person to do. The ideas were so grandiose in nature that you'd have to. And I think split up and work separately. And I think that was really important because everyone had their role and responsibility in the process. There was choice. There was expertise development. You could develop different expertise than maybe your classmates were developing because of what your interests were and what you were trying to accomplish.
I think the most rewarding thing for me to see over the years going into different classrooms, different content areas, was they were teams and they either self-identified their specialty, like I'm the best at creating a website, I'm really good with creating spreadsheets and a business plan, I'm really good at writing. And they would, even as a team, either self-identify their strengths or someone would say, you know, you could do that and I'll do this. And it was amazing to see when you saw the beginning, when everyone was, they were all spread out and not knowing what they were going to do. And then to see them designate the company. They were a company, not just a team. They were a company that was bringing an idea or a project to fruition. And end result, if we haven't got there, is there was a major competition at the end every year called the Student Innovation Expo. This was something the students in the different schools had heard about it from previous teams. They had been to the expo to present in front of parents, teachers, other students, professionals in the field. That was a huge piece, that someone was going to be judging them who had real business experience, real relevance. They were presenting to people that were doctors and nurses or professors of microbiology. It wasn't just, yay, mom and dad voted for me kind of thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, that goes back to that whole relevance idea we've been underlying, that theme that's been underlying everything we've been talking about in terms of it matters because the products these students created really could be used. It went beyond the four walls of the classroom.
Right.
And I think that was a really important key to the process. I was recently reading one of our colleagues who used to work with us as a teacher in the program. She's now completing her dissertation, and she was just an amazing teacher in the classroom with students, and she was able to get those kids to do exactly what we were talking about. And she writes, "When trying to replicate this model in a subsequent school later in my career as an administrator, the largest barrier that seemed to appear was the need to have flexibility of structures that would accommodate the needs of immersive experiences, and secondly, teachers that were passionate enough to work through its establishment. I kept being told that a traditional public school had too many requirements and logistical impediments to make this model of education work." She goes on to say that she doesn't necessarily buy that, and I would agree with her. I don't buy that either, but I think it talks to the idea of building teacher capacity to be this kind of teacher or to work in this kind of learning environment. So what would you say to the hesitant teacher who's struggling in this environment but really might want to do it? I mean, I don't for a second believe that traditional public education can't have this type of learning. I'm basing an entire school off of this type of learning model where we're getting kids to do this kind of work on a daily basis. How do we develop the teacher capacity to make this kind of learning happen? Because the evidence is pretty clear. It makes kids achieve at higher levels, and they are certainly more engaged.
But still, you still were up against the time constraints and the flexibility. And all teachers, I would almost know before they opened their mouths what they were going to say. I have to get through this curriculum. There's not enough time.
Okay, so that's a great place to start. And you have to learn, you have to have the entree first. You have to learn all the material so you can do the project. Or you have to learn the content or the concept so you could do the project. And I think that's just such a bogus idea because you can learn the content, the concepts, the knowledge by doing the project.
That's a very good way to put it. Nice metaphor there.
Oh, thank
you. Yes, you're right. But I think it takes a lot for teachers who have been inundated with every new idea that's come down the pike. And how do I know this is going to work? And it was hard to engage them in the beginning. And then that very first time when those students go to the expo with what they've learned, with their own excitement. And even the teachers are beginning to see the engagement in the classroom. Students who are staying late to work on something. Students who are working together. And then for teachers to see students so engaged in working together.
Right. And we say that we can see it, and we say that anecdotally, but I think one of the important things that we did in our work was we were measuring that along the way, and we were generating the evidence to support the fact that these things were happening.
Right.
You know, I was speaking with one of my teachers earlier, and we're hosting, in essence, a mini expo at our school tomorrow for our sixth grade students, where students have developed and created inventions. They went through this process of learning. They did a take-apart lab. They learned some of the content by doing a take-apart lab. We had stuff, all sorts of stuff. From smartphones to adding machines to old DVD players that kids took apart to learn how these things work. And again, back to that partnership idea, we brought adults in who have expertise. It's an amazing way to get dads to come to school sometimes. And then the students developed their ideas and they shark tanked them just like the television show. And then they went through that process of inventing and reflecting and recording and writing, to the point where they're going to have their presentation set for tomorrow to showcase them. But I think the interesting part of the story that I wanted to share was the teacher was talking about it, and she said, you know, initially when we started doing this, I was nervous about setting the projects up early because, you know, we set them up in the cafeteria. And every day we have 600 students come through the cafeteria in the morning. And I was afraid that, you know, I was there vigilantly because I was monitoring to make sure no one was messing with the projects, because you know how middle school students can be. And he said, but you know what? They don't do that. They respect each other's work. As a matter of fact, you can't imagine how many kids drag their friends over to show them the work that they did. So I think it's exciting to know that we set up an environment which is very academic in nature. Kids are coming through in the morning to put their books away and their packs away and maybe have some breakfast in the morning. And all this work is out. And they totally respect it because they know what their peers have put into it. And that's just at a small scale. The work we were doing was massive in terms of groups of 25 students sometimes working together collaboratively on a single project. And they were excited and owned it. And I think what that gets to is really indicators for scale. This is a scalable way to learn. Once you build the teacher capacity in the process, kids can learn this way. And maybe it just happens. And your expo, while it's fantastic, your expo reaches across multiple states and thousands of students might be participating. An expo can take place in the confines of a school and still involve the same features, right? You can have the experts from the field that come in and share the experience with the kids, students departmentalizing and learning, focused on learning content. It can scale in a variety of different ways, but the idea is that multiple teachers, multiple disciplines can be doing this kind of work with students as the foundation of their learning.
And I think when you saw that it was multiple disciplines, it wasn't just technology classes, it was e-commerce, it was science across many things, chemistry, biology, health science, you know, there was all these different content areas. I think that was always surprising. In fact, to the point where we had one school had so many classes doing these projects, they would have a prerequisite, a prequel, what do they call it in sports, a heat leading up to an elimination of who would go to the big expo. So within their school, they would have a mini expo to identify those students that would go on to the major expo.
You know, if we kind of wrap this up a little bit, I think while we were talking about an innovative program and bringing it to scale across states and multiple schools and multiple teachers, training for them, it in essence synthesized down to the tenets of what student-centered learning is all about. First of all, that students get personalized learning. They build relations with teachers and their peers that allows them to make choices and decisions of what they need to learn because they need to learn it anywhere, anytime. The idea that students can learn beyond the four walls of the classrooms and the technology certainly enhanced that process. And although we didn't talk a lot about it, certainly the idea that it's competency-based, that we're learning meaningful and relevant content linked to standards. Just because we do a project doesn't mean we're not learning key standards and demonstrating our competency of them. In fact, quite the opposite. You have to do that along the way.
I think when you go back, it was always amazing to me when you went back and looked at the standard. Not only did they reach the standard, they excelled in so many ways.
And finally, student-owned learning, where students really are taking ownership of what they are doing. They make their choices, they make their decisions, and I think the kind of work we did and still continue, and the center still continues to do, is really important. So, Jane, I want to thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. It's been fun to reminisce about the old days, but also, they're not so old. These are key features to making education relevant and meaningful for students. So thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
Satellite is a podcast produced by the National Center for Inquiry Learning. Learn more about the center at inquirylearningcenter.org. That's inquirylearningcenter.org.